I'm excited about our next guest on my Creative Entrepreneur podcast. Let's see what this woman is all about. Let's bring her in. Good morning, Louise.
How are you? How was your trip back?
It was really good, actually. I actually ended up getting 3 seats to myself on the plane.
Lovely.
Craziness. I'm representing Sydney in my background today. I wanted to do
nice.
Yeah. I put that on for our podcast today.
It's funny, my next meeting is actually with people in LA as well. Today is America Day.
All right. So I'm going for Australia today and you're going for America today.
Clearly, I've got a meeting with 2 from Los Angeles and 1 from Salt Lake City at 8:45.
You are on fire. You are on fire.
Just randomly.
I know. Well, let's get started. Hi, welcome to the Creative Podcast. Glad you're here today. All right. Hi, it's Jilly again at the Creative, and welcome to another episode of the Creative Entrepreneur podcast, where I interview leading female executives, digital and creative disruptors, and entrepreneurs who share their insights, tactics, and strategies that made them successful passion leaders. It's my big thing right now, passion leadership. And the podcast is part of The Creative, a platform that provides content, connection, and creative resources to light a fire in your belly and heart and mind to achieve the impossible. And it is my favorite side hustle when I'm not building empires of my own and leading teams around the world. I invite really interesting guest speakers to join me on the Creative Entrepreneur podcast. And the topics have been centered around creativity, entrepreneurship, and a little bit of both. And I'm also focusing on women a lot in business lately that tends to touch on some really juicy topics. Some of them that I've noticed is strength, empowerment, life stories, and ultimately the path least traveled, which brings me to today's episode. I am really excited to welcome Louise Gardner as my special guest today on my podcast. How are you doing, Louise?
Excellent. Thanks, Julie. Thanks for the invite. Really excited to talk to you this morning.
Yes, me too. You know, Louise is a founder. I love meeting founders, people who build things from the ground up. She's the managing director of Pledge Consulting, and it's a specialist project management consulting business based in Sydney, Australia. That's why I have the Sydney Harbour Bridge behind me in honor of Louise. And I'm originally from Sydney. And Louise founded this business in 2012 after becoming frustrated with corporate life after 15 years working in large corporations. I hear you, girl. I actually resonate with you so much because we're both PMO leaders and I've been inspired by you from the get-go. I literally stalked Louise on LinkedIn. And just watched what she was doing, and she was posting some really cool posts. And then I snooped up on her, like, her website for Pledge, and I was like, who is this woman? And I reached out to her, cold reach out. I don't normally do that. Like, I'm pretty, like, I'm not going to reach out to most people. Like, a lot of people reach out to me, and I'm kind of an introverted extrovert, so I'm not, like, constantly reaching out to people. I pick and choose, and I've met so many people in my life, but I called her basically because I so resonated with your ethos, your thought leadership, and just the fact that you built this business yourself. And of course, it's in the field that I love so much. And we met the first time a couple of weeks ago in near Sydney for coffee lunch. And it was so great to meet you in person. So I'm so happy to be with you today on my podcast.
It's always nice to meet a kindred spirit, hey? And yeah, it was so good to meet you in person as well after connecting from a distance. So yeah, it is. I don't do a lot of cold outreaches either. And I don't accept a lot of cold outreaches. So I think we were obviously fated to meet.
I think so too. I really do. And I can really, you know, I feel like now I can call you a friend too, because
Yeah,
we've been
absolutely.
fine together. So maybe just give us a little bit before we get into the topic that I have in mind today. Just tell us a little bit about you, that you feel would be inspiring for other female entrepreneurs and passion leaders.
Sure. I guess the first thing to do is to explain my non-Australian accent. Don't confuse your listeners too much with all these accents going on. So I'm originally from Liverpool in the UK, and I don't know, no one sets out wanting to be in PMO or project management, I don't think. I don't think any of us are sitting there as little girls dreaming of all the meetings and
No,
the
I didn't even know what it was when I first started
templates
at
and
work.
the So I kind of fell into doing what I do. A couple of junior roles, big utility. Water was where I really started my career to all intents and
Water, right?
purposes. Water utilities.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of worked myself up the tree to a fairly senior level, and then in 2004.
Which, by the way, is no mean feat. I mean, that right
No,
there.
and I kind of explain that away now. Like, it's really nothing to be proud of, but it was so much to be proud of. Like, completely male-dominated industry. You know, I dropped out of school before the end of year 11. So I had to take myself back to university, and with the support of the company, which was nice. But whole other story there. But yeah, good to kind of say there was a fair bit of effort involved in getting up that corporate ladder to a senior management role. And kind of 2002 to 2004, I had a bit of an existential crisis. Kind of, I was unwell. I had terrible thyroid problems. I finished renovating my house. I finished my uni degree. A relationship came to an end, and I thought, I'm kind of done here. I'm going to move to Australia. Didn't really know anyone in Australia, had no work visa, not much of a clue about anything, frankly, but I really recognized it as a kind of now or never kind of a moment. So did all of that, moved to Australia, got sponsored within, I don't know, a couple of weeks, which doesn't happen. You know, it's just one of those things.
Amazing.
It doesn't happen very often anyway. I mean, it wasn't a career move. I
Doesn't
went
surprise
very much
me now that I know a little
upwards.
bit about you. It doesn't surprise me because you're
Yeah,
kind of
exactly.
a tractor, but keep going.
So went backwards career-wise very much, but I found what I was looking for personally, which was a beautiful place to live with nice weather, very different to the north of England, and a great group of friends. You know, straight away from being here for like, I think, 2 weeks, I met some of the best friends that I still have today. So again, if you're a believer in what's meant to be, it was definitely meant to be for me. So the first job was all about sponsorship, and wasn't a great job career-wise, but a great job personally, but it didn't pay an awful lot of money. So after the sponsorship was still all worked out, I promptly went straight back to doing exactly what I was doing in the UK, doing a 2-hour drive across town every day, grinding my way up that corporate ladder once again. Actually really quite good fun to do it again. Went back and did my MBA here in Sydney. And I'd always kind of toyed with the idea of doing my own thing. I knew that it was somewhere in the future. I just didn't. It was more of a confidence thing as well. I don't know if I felt confident enough to do it. I think one of the things behind doing the MBA was making sure the capability was there. And you know, I don't know if that changed too much from a capability perspective. It's nice to have, but I think what it did was it gave me confidence. You know, I was as educated as anybody else in the room,
Yeah, it
which
toughens
was
you up,
important to
whatever
me.
you have to do. It really toughens you up too to have that
Yeah.
confidence.
Yeah, I think so. And so, you know, 2012 came around. I actually lost my father at the very beginning of that year. Met my now husband in the middle of 2012. I think all of those life changes, it seems to take a huge life change to push me into action. So the next, after the kind of illness and the moving to Australia, that was my kind of next big vortex. And so out of that, I thought, right, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not having fun. I'm earning a fair bit of money, which is great, but it's not making me happy or satisfying me. So Pledge Consulting was born really on a plane back from South America after my MBA celebration trip, and I sketched out what I wanted the business to look like. Got home, very slow start, you know, set up some of the paperwork, formed a company, bit of a service proposition, value statements, all that kind of thing. And it came to life quite slowly.
I think, why was it slow? Was it their fear there, or was it just because of circumstances?
Couple of things, really. My employer kept making me offers I couldn't refuse. And stuff. I'll just do this next project. And it was really too good to turn down. And yeah, it was a bit scary to take a leap from a good six-figure income to, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it actually, this is superb again. The decision was actually made for me. I got pregnant with my daughter. Actually, a bit before that, I assigned my substantive position at work away and took a project that would end in 12 or 18 months. And around that time as well, I also got pregnant. And so I'd signed myself out of that job. I'd said, once this project is done, I won't be coming back.
You actually made like a deadline in a way. Like you had to.
I forced my own hand. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was good as well, because I took a redundancy, which gave me some money to allay that financial fear. So it was just all spectacularly good timing. Took a year off when I had my daughter, and I said, you know, this is it now. I won't be going back to any kind of corporate job. And touch wood, from that day to this, I never have.
That's just incredible. I would love to just touch on a couple of things that I really gathered from this journey so far from you. First of all, just the kindred pieces of us. So just a few years before that, I took the leap from Sydney and came to Los Angeles. And I know the feeling of just taking that risk and just going for it. And I feel like, and I never look back too, you know, there's so many things that happened for me in LA that I didn't have in Sydney. And it's funny that you chose Sydney. It's just... doesn't really, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter where you go. It's just that you're going to a new destination and you're making a change. And what I also heard, it's a journey. Like, it's funny, you were talking about going up the corporate path, but then you know, you kind of had to go back down and then you try start up again. Like, it's never just going all the way up. That's not career. Career is like, it goes over here, make it here, comes over there. You're still moving forward, but it changes. And I heard that in your story. I love the life, I mean, for better or for worse, that life changes pushed you into action. That's big, big. And I realized that too. I've had life changes. I've had medical issues in the past that forced me to confront my current life and change it for the better. I've always, you know, those pivots, you hear about these things from entrepreneurs all the time, you know, I was in a car accident, or I had a thing, or you know, something happened, a near-death experience, whatever that is. And it doesn't have to be medical, but it's funny how actually these triggers do actually do meaningful change. And losing my mother early last year, it's really made me go through, I think I'm still going through it, a metamorphosis for my next journey. So I heard that in yours. I also heard, I love these golden nuggets, money doesn't buy you happiness. You're talking about how you were, you know, making a good quid, but at the end of the day, you weren't happy. That's really big to acknowledge.
It is, but I'm going to say as well, I'm not, you know, money doesn't make you happy, but not having any makes you unhappy. So, super conscious of that as well.
That's right. There's a fine line, isn't it? Yeah, there's a fine line.
I got no ambitions to be poor. So kind of important to me as well, to keep a reasonable standard of living. You know, I'm not the kind of girl that wants to eat beans or noodles every day.
But you're a really good risk taker. Like, you know, coming to Australia and then leaving your job and then...
See, I've never seen that as risk. I don't think I'm a good risk manager. I don't think I'm a good risk taker. All of the risks I've taken have been underpinned by what's the worst that can happen. So when I first came to Australia, my boss, who's an excellent man, said, take a year off. I'm like, I'm not coming back. Don't want a year off. He said, take a year off.
Wow.
And he filled the forms himself. He made me take a year off. Now, my plan B, if I didn't get an Australian visa, I was going to go to Japan and teach. I wasn't going back,
right.
But I had options. So I could have gone back to that nice, cozy job with my tail between my legs saying I tried, but it didn't work.
Yeah.
So there wasn't a lot of risk there. You know, I sold a house in the UK. It wasn't a particularly expensive house, but I put those money in bonds. So if it had all gone to custard,
right.
I wasn't going to starve.
That's great.
So
you always had a safety net in your mind. You
I
knew
think so.
When
I started,
fall back on.
When I started the business, I didn't start it till I had that redundancy money. So I've taken some risks, sure, but I don't think, along with these life changes, the other constant is a platform to say, okay, what's the worst thing that can happen if this doesn't work?
It's a great attitude. And Louise, not everyone has this attitude. I mean, you say it like, and I, not to trivialize the trivia.
Yeah, it just seems
how
very
you're
logical
saying
to
it.
Me. Just seems super logical.
And that to me is about mindset. Like your mind is entrepreneurial. That's why you're here. That's why we're having this conversation. It's like getting to that mindset of trust. Like there's a lot of trust there, knowing that you can do it.
Yeah.
What is that? Is there something in your childhood or upbringing? Where does that come from in you?
Oh, who knows? You know, I've got a brother who's exactly the opposite. So it's nothing in the way we were
Hope you're not
brought up.
Watching this, brother.
I'm almost 100% positive that he's not.
And if he is, okay.
I don't know. I work with a coach here in Sydney on some strategy stuff. And whenever we come up with new ideas, she always says, your self-belief is like nothing I've ever seen. I back myself. I don't always get it right, but where I get it wrong, it's usually in the smaller stuff where I'm comfortable to say, hey, well, let's give this a go. It's small stuff. I've got another mentor in my life as well who calls this firing bullets and cannonballs. So fire your bullets. Consequences are very low on firing bullets. Cost is low. Impact is low. If you hit the target, great. If they don't, nobody gets killed. Be very sure about your cannonballs because you don't get many of those and they've got to hit the target. And I kind of like that.
What defines a cannonball for you?
A cannonball is something, you know, from a business perspective or a life perspective, really, it's something that takes a big financial investment, has consequences if it goes wrong, but if it goes right, can lead to really great opportunities.
Right.
So know
Amazing.
The difference between bullets and cannonballs is, I think, important.
Yeah. So now you have Pledge Consulting. It's been going, what, since 2012, right?
2012, yeah.
What would be some of the areas that you feel running a business has been rewarding and challenging? And also, not to put gender on this, but, you know, it is an entrepreneur podcast, but anything there from a female boss kind of perspective as well that you'd like to share?
To take the first question first, I dance to work every single day. I love what I do. It's not without its challenges sometimes. But I get to play with I feel like I'm playing. I get to play with things that give me pleasure. Now, again, you know, I work with people who tell me I do too much. But I do the things that I enjoy, you know, so I will do a podcast. I quite like doing the editing. I shouldn't do it. I should send it to somebody else, but I like doing that stuff. A piece of consulting comes up. If it's something that interests me, I will do it. If it's not something that really gets me excited, I'll give it to somebody else to do. I'll do the oversight piece, but I don't necessarily need to be on the ground with the customer. So the ability to craft the kind of professional life that gives me, I'm going to say it, joy. It's a big word. It's a small world with a big connotation. But yeah, I feel joyful most of the time I'm in the office.
It's just wonderful. I mean, I am so, like, my whole ethos around the creative is about building passion leaders, which means pursuing a path you love and leading with joy and love
yeah.
and positivity. And so you're just so right on it. And how's that working out for you?
It's going pretty well. What I've realized as well over the years is I'm actually quite good at this. I'm not so much talking about running a business, because what I'm loving about running a business is I'm learning every day. I learn. I don't know everything about that. I don't know enough, probably. I've still got a huge development pathway about growing and scaling. We're very much in a growth phase at the moment, and scaling that business, again, there's more risks, there's more challenges, there's more hard stuff to come there. But in terms of the subject matter, in terms of, you know, running projects, PMOs, managing teams, I'm good at that. That's my bag. And so having that, I've got a real sense of accomplishment there. And I think if I take the second part of the question around female bosses and leadership, I'm really proud of the fact that the feedback I get from my team is that they are happy with my leadership. They come to me for things. They don't need to come to me. I mean, they don't bother me if they don't, you know, without good reason, but they can come to me with a personal issue or a challenge, or they'll come up with something professional and they'll say, actually, can I just run this by you? They're comfortable to do that. And my team, actually, talking about gender, are predominantly men. And that's not by design. That's because a lot of the specialists in our space, you know, who are, and you're talking about specialists, you're typically talking about people in their 40s and 50s. They're mostly men. And I'd love to hire more women, but I'm not finding them. So if you're listening to this and you're a woman in this space in Sydney, love to connect with you. But my experience of female leadership is not a good one, I hate to say. Because I came up through utilities, the women who I have only had two female bosses in my career, and I was at quite a senior level, and they were one up. So general manager, director level, very senior. And both of those ladies were in those jobs, certainly one, and I think the other one, were in those roles because of quotas. Male-dominated organizations needed some women. These women had been here the longest. Pop them in. Now, I go back and forth.
Yeah.
I go back and forth whether I'm pro quota or not. I think we've got to get more women in these roles. So I'm pro. And then I think back to my experience and I think, because they were defensive. They didn't necessarily want other women in there. There wasn't many of us. So if you were bright and ambitious, chances are you were going to get into one of those roles. So I just had two really bad experiences. One in the UK, actually, one here in Australia. So it's not a country thing, which was disappointing. So I'm very conscious of gender. I'm conscious about hiring enough women, although I'm not doing a very good job right now. And I'm conscious about being a good leader across both genders. I don't think leadership has a gender. I think you're a good... When you bring gender into it, that's when I think things start to go astray. You lead individuals regardless of gender, and I'm quite conscious of that.
That's just a really great point. You know, I have had different opinions about leadership and gender. I have seen, and I have been asked to hire based on, you know, diversity metrics that a company might have. Oh, we need to hire more women. We need to hire more minority. And we do in companies, but I feel like we're lost in the rationale about good leadership. It just becomes a number game after that. Now, I think there's a lot of problems in getting strong female leaders from the get-go of being of recruiting, and just women and minorities of either gender being able to get into college and move up the ranks and be able to be a good candidate for leadership. Because to your point, we need good leaders. It doesn't matter what gender, what ethnicity. But it ends up being just a, let's see if we can, you know, check off or tick off our numbers.
And as a small business, we can't do that. I have to hire for talent. And you know what my perception of the women that I do come across is that they're not as confident as men. So if and I think this is supported by research, if you see a job description and a man hits 20% of the criteria, he'll apply for it, where a woman won't apply for it unless it's she feels like she hits nearly all of the criteria. So we probably experience some of that. And then there's the elephant in the room, of course, where a lot of us will go out the workforce for a few years to have kids, or we'll drop down to part-time, and then either you lose traction in your career or you lose confidence or some of both. And so there are fewer women. And it's unfortunately a fact, and I don't really know how we overcome it. Now, as an employer, I need to see you. I need to talk to you. I need you to present for an opportunity.
No, absolutely. I'm going to pause for a minute. I'm always in a little bit of a quandary where I have to hire. I remember at my last three corporate positions where I was a hiring manager and had to bring in folks that I would have these amazing resumes, trying to be as impartial as possible and trying to get the right candidate in for the role. And then also having the pressure, and it's a good pressure, from HR on the diversity metrics. But it's I think it's important, though, that at the end of the day, when we have a diverse set of candidates, so we're not just getting like a bunch of men in the final round, we do want to bring in, you know, our diverse candidates. And then I want the best person for the job, right? Yeah. Which is important. Just for the dummies out there of project management, program management, because we get a whole series of listeners and watchers for the podcast. Mm-hmm. Can you just help define your work? Like, what is it you
act? Sure. Yeah, it's a great, even my husband's baffled by this. It's a really good point. So what is it that you do all day? I guess starting off with projects, the kind of projects that we work with, support, are big projects really. But for us, a project can be anything from building a new road or a tunnel or a piece of major infrastructure. We've recently been working on the new airport that's being built out in Western Sydney. So big infrastructure projects, from that end of the spectrum, very hard physical assets, to big IT projects and programs. So things like back-end corporate systems, payroll systems, HR systems,
things
systems
that
manage projects themselves.
Things that take a long time to do.
Things that multi-year, multi-million dollar investments.
Yeah.
I guess when I define a project, I'm talking about an investment in something by an organization. So what we do as a business is we don't run these projects, typically. We help organizations run them properly and in a systematic kind of a way. So we will work with them to set up frameworks, standards, guidelines, governance, to help make sure that they are being very structured in the way that they develop that project. So making sure it's properly planned, making sure that the expenditure is correctly governed, making sure any changes to what's being delivered are correctly documented, and decisions are making, rather than somebody just changing their mind and say, I know we asked for a red one, but now we want a blue one, could completely change the design. So we call our project management officers, or P3O, we call it project program or portfolio management officers. And a PMO really oversees and governs all of those organizational investments. And so there can be lots of different things involved in that. You know, if you're in a big organization, you might have a portfolio management office that also chooses what kinds of projects or investments you make as a business. Or you might have something which is kind of small and simple, and a PMO that sits within a small project. A small project is still probably a couple of million dollars. And just make sure all the reporting is done, that risks are managed, budgets are managed, it finishes on time. So a PMO can be kind of one or two people in its smallest iteration, or it can be 10 people who are, you know, highly specialist in corporate finance or corporate risk or planning. It's a very variable thing, and really depends on the size and complexity of the project that's going on. What have I missed, Julie?
You're pretty much there. I mean, I think that you nailed it. I wouldn't mind diving a little deeper since I am in this space, but you're very much in the professional services organization industry where you've got a client. Whereas, a lot of my PMO work, and I've done that too, but a lot of my PMO work, I have been the client. And I'm working with these professional service organizations. What do you think is the important key part about working with your clients, on a day-to-day and month-to-month basis?
Yeah, having the client understand that projects are not done because we all want to do projects. Projects are done to release value. They're done. So, no one buys an airport because we need another building and a strip of concrete. You build an airport because you need additional air capacity to increase the GDP of the state, in our case, the country. You have congested roads around the existing airport. You need to just be better at moving people around this enormous continent, people and things, I should say. So we don't do projects just to keep ourselves employed. We do them for the output that they bring. And sometimes we all, but sometimes customers, they're not coming from that position. They're coming from a position of, I've been given this job to do and I just need to do it as quickly as possible. And let's just get it done. And if there's a change, let's just make it. So having that understanding of, coming back to the language, a project is an investment. It's taking, and think about the investments we make personally. You build a house or you buy a car. You need to make sure you get value from that investment or you're wasting your money. No different in organizations. The only difference is the money we're talking about is much, much more significant. And in many cases, certainly with the projects we work on, that is government money, it's taxpayer money. And so making sure that the taxpayer gets a value for that investment, very, very important. So to come back to your question, having a customer sees the we're all about releasing that value. So for us to have an easy and good customer engagement, it really helps if the customer understands that. Now, you'd think that's a no-brainer, right? Because we need to be engaged by a customer to come in. But sometimes we're engaged because people tell them to engage us. You need some help with that. And they don't necessarily always understand what, why we do projects. And it sounds really simple, doesn't it? I don't mean to condescend to anybody, but people get caught up in the urgency of, I've got a KPI to deliver this thing. And they forget why they're delivering it. And so if they understand that's what good customer looks like for us.
Yeah, I really resonate with that. What I'm hearing is really understanding why, what's the result, what are we trying to achieve? Getting really knowing that, like as a good program or project or success manager, just really, really getting behind the outcome. And then you're talking about delivering. It's funny because every project that I've ever been on, any project, someone's always trying to move the needle. And I'm not saying move the needle like a success needle. I'm like, move the needle like the deadline forward or back or whatever it is. There's a problem here or we need it faster. And it's always this kind of sense of urgency, which I love playing in that field. Like you want a sense of urgency, but like, how do we like share results? And I'm all about iterative results, meaning we have an end result, which might take forever, right? But communication and collaboration and alignment between client and team or just the teams is really key on that, like communication. And I would want to kind of tap that back into you and your kind of your magic, the way what you bring to the table. I've noticed already about you that you're a really strong communicator and you are willing to go out and hustle and meet clients and you're in there, you're in the, what are some of the things that you do that bring alignment and communication? Because you've got a real talent there.
Oh, thanks, Jenny. I don't know, really. I guess just being honest. Sometimes you're giving people messages that they don't want to hear, which is hard when they've employed you to tell them what they want to hear. So just being really simple and straightforward and no bullshit, but also, you know, recognizing that they've got goals that don't necessarily align with yours. They get a bonus if they deliver this thing on time. But here's me saying, actually, you've got to stop. You've got to think this through. This is not going to work. Their bonus isn't on what's delivered. Their bonus is on just delivering something on time. So I don't really know the answer to your question. I guess it's
I think you just answered it. I mean, you just keep it real.
Yeah. It's just keep it real, and it's practice. I don't think anyone comes out the gate feeling super confident about being able to deliver some of these messages, especially when we're talking about CEOs or CIOs who are, you know, very busy and important in inverted commas. But yeah, it's there's no other way really than just being logical, truthful, straightforward.
Amazing. What's next for you? What are you looking into? I mean, being the entrepreneur that you are, you've built and founded your own business. And I can see that you said earlier, I'm constantly learning. Like, what's your next move in exploring your entrepreneurship?
Yeah, we've got some bullets and some cannonballs all charged and ready to go. So a few things going on with us. So we've really gotten into events over the since COVID. In fact, we did our first event in August 2020 when certainly most of Australia was locked down.
Yeah.
And we did an online, what we call the PMO Leadership Symposium. It went really, really well. And so we've brought that to life in a face-to-face format now. So we do one of those each May in Melbourne, and one in October in Sydney, where we get 60, 70 PMO leaders in a room for a day. And we have some speakers. But the thing I love most about those sessions is that we do round tables, we have panel discussions, we do speed networking, which is really fun. So, and that's really just been so successful. We're going to cap it probably this year at the level that it's at, because we find that number is just enough that you can meet everybody in their room. But because we've been so successful, we're also going to add to our events program this year and do a 2-day project management technology showcase event. That'll be in Sydney at the end of July. And we're going to invite some of our technology vendor friends to join us, because we feel there's a real appetite in the market for, you know, particularly with the dawn of AI and, you know, everyone's looking for solutions to work in a more agile way. And then there's all the traditional project management stuff that hasn't gone anywhere, and there's more and more good technology solutions to support that. So we're going to give a platform for technology. That's going to be bigger. That's a 2-day event. We're probably going to get 150, 200 people there at the Hilton Hotel in Sydney at the last couple of days in July. So I'm super excited for that. We are just about to go down the road of recruitment in a more serious way. So our core business at the moment is advisory, it's consulting. Occasionally our customers will come to me and say, oh, have you got a business analyst, or have you got a PMO leader? We've got a 6-month role here. And I always say yes, but we've never really harnessed recruitment as a stream of business. So I'm just out in
the... We're hard to find, Louise.
But I've just about to hire a recruiter, actually, who is a woman. Yay! By the time this is out in the world, we'll have a recruiter on board, and very much going to start supporting our customers in terms of giving them great people as well. And so hopefully I can put into action some of the things I've talked about getting more women on the team. Somehow we're going to make it happen.
Amazing.
We've also done a fair bit around coaching and mentoring in the last year. We've got a program called Elevate, which is a 6-month semi-structured mentoring program for project management professionals, whether you're a project manager or a PMO leader. We've got a research-based program that can help people get to the next level in their career. Probably going to change the name since we've called it Elevate. Do you know how many Elevate programs we've seen out there?
You can call it Pledge Elevate or something.
Yeah, but the principles hold, right? You do the program, you get taken up to the next level.
Right.
So
I have a coaching program called Accelerate.
Okay, perfect. That was another one on the list.
Mine is
We
mine.
knew we already came across an accelerate. That's why we didn't go for
So
accelerate.
funny.
So it
I love how you're really continuing to grow and expand the business. It's like it doesn't stop here. You know, it's con that's a big lesson for all of us who found new businesses and start something new. It's organic and growing. I've been running a nonprofit songwriting organization, completely different, for 23 years, and it continues to change every 6 months to a year. We're doing something new for it, which, you
Yeah. Well,
know,
if you're not growing, you're dying. You know, I don't know where that phrase came from, but it really resonates with me. You've got to, and that's why I like this concept of bullets so much. You've just got to keep throwing things at the wall, keep firing your bullets. Some things will stick, some things won't stick. But what we try to have as the principle behind all of those things is, will this give value to our community? Will people be better when they finished our program, or when, you know, they'll get a great job from us, or whatever it is, will this do something positive for our community?
I mean, you are just p positivity in a pill. I mean, everything that you do.
Husband probably wouldn't agree.
Well, I don't know what's the home life, but I just noticed this about you. You're full of energy, and it's so inspiring to see, Louise. And I mean, kudos to you because, you know, you've been going at it a while, and yet you're not letting the. I mean, maybe it's a good day. I don't know, but you're not
This
letting.
is no, this is me.
You're not letting circumstances or just stuff get you down. You have this inner drive, which is so great to see and inspiring for me and for others, I hope, that are listening and watching. So just to, I think a final question for me to wrap this up is, you know, going there with your personality and who you are, what drives you when you're not in the office? Like, what do you enjoy?
A nice walk along one of our beautiful coastal paths. I'm a
Yeah.
huge book nerd, so I read a huge, I read, and I've just, well, I won't say just, probably over 12 months ago now, discovered Audible. So between always having a book on my Kindle and always having one going in the car or on a walk, like, I've smashed through so much reading matter. Trying to keep fit. You know, what we do is very sedentary. I spend a lot of my day sitting down, so yeah, swimming
Totally get
and
that. I'm
walking.
trying
And
to do a CrossFit right now and I'm completely failing, but I
oh,
love
you're brave. CrossFit,
moving
oh,
my body.
I'm not there. I did a Pilates, my first Pilates class of the year on Tuesday, and I'm still barely able to stand up. So I'm feel I'm having a I did a lot of traveling at the back end of last year, and all of my usual good habits kind of went in the bin. So I'm started off again this week, and yeah, I can barely move.
I know, I walked in today like a zombie into the house, like, oh, I don't know how to get into the house. Listen, I have just reaped so much good stuff today in our podcast. I mean, from the journey that you've taken, the kind of little, you're an instant manifester. So a lot of that coming because
I
of
don't know about that.
positive go get it attitude. I think that takes a lot, you know, and I talk about being a passion leader. And following your life passion is about this grit. You got to put in the hard work, which I see you do every day. But I also see this passion, like the drive, the joy, the positivity, the wanting, the, you know, I love that the saying you said, I dance to work every day. What? Just that metaphor is so beautiful. And I hope that folks listening and watching really feel that. Like you said, I feel like I'm playing with things that give me pleasure and pursuing joy. I mean, running a business, a competitive market, and doing this with the big guys, and loving what you do, and loving your life, that's a great legacy and
What's the
really.
worst can happen? You know, we go broke, I go get another job, and then it all starts again. The wheel goes around again. Hopefully that won't happen. Touch all the wood. But that's the worst that can happen, right?
That's the worst. In fact, even that, you know, like where there's so many choices we have in life, and Yeah, and it is about embracing. And but I think what I learned today from you is, yes, you can do anything, but while you don't call it a risk, taking that leap of faith and following your heart, I think it's big. And it's a big theme for me, and I just really loved hearing your story today about that. Is there anything finally you want to, like a little golden nugget you want to throw at us before we
I think
depart?
so. I think I'm all out of nuggets. But yeah, look, very, very happy to connect with your listeners on LinkedIn.
Yeah, where can we find you?
LinkedIn, Louise Gardner. Our company page as well is worth a follow if you're interested in this space particularly. We do a lot of webinars and master classes and that kind of thing. So the Pledge Consulting company page is worth a look. We're on Instagram, Pledge_consulting AU on Instagram. That's pretty much it. Probably LinkedIn is my favorite platform, because all our projecty people tend to live there.
Fabulous. I'm grateful that I'm connected with you. It's great. And I'm so happy that you came on the podcast today. Thanks so much.
Likewise, thank you for having me. Very nice to meet a kindred spirit, and I'm sure we'll speak soon in some capacity.
Oh, I'm sure we will. I'll make sure of it. All righty, Louise. Well, have a great day and enjoy your conversations with America that's coming up after this.
I will do.
And I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks, Jilly. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Bye.
See you. Bye now.
Come and join us at thecreative.com, CREAHVE.com, or find us on social. Or find me, Jilly Moon. See you soon.